Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We use science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Hey Todd, did you happen to hear about the there's a sea monster that ate this fleet of boats? The boats were carrying tubers and
tuber. Okay, I won't get distracted with an arm joke here. Okay, tubers.
And you know, it's not surprising because you can't just eat one potato chip. Got to eat them all.
This is Tim Curry laughs for 10 minutes.
That's pretty great.
And I couldn't figure out if you were going with inner tubers or tubers potato, but oh no, I can't stop it. I was going to play. Oh, I can't play two things at once. What's happening?
Tubers.
I know. This is why I need an iPad, I think.
I barely knew her.
There we go. But the reason I'm playing Tim Curry is because this past weekend was the Wizard World Comic Con.
We already have 8 comments, by the way.
Oh my gosh. Are they all about potatoes?
There's 5 about tubers. And
it's not a tuba.
It's not a tuba. But Jacques, Jocelyn, Rob Reeve, I used to work with in the Navy. Jocelyn's a neighbor, and Jacques I work with right now. Yeah, so
nice.
good people.
Wizard World Comic Con was this past weekend, and I was there for 3 days with our friend Brian the Unipiper at his booth, and so it was this really fascinating experience, kind of being able to be there for that long and seeing the people. And it was so interesting to see how, like, legitimately excited and like agog people were when they like met Brian. Like, is the Unipiper here?
I saw nervous people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like people that have like spent all the, there's this amazing, you'll hear us talk about the guy in the Galactus costume, like this amazing costume who was just like fawning over Brian, and like it was so funny. Well, that, and to see that how long people could handle hearing the bagpipes that loudly,
right,
in a convention hall.
Bagpipes are intensely loud.
Incredibly loud.
Yeah. Heidi Laumann is laughing.
Hi Heidi. But yeah, so that we'll talk to Brian here in a second, but it was really neat to see. It was a really cool experience.
We have a question from the crowd did anyone cosplay Brian?
No, but I did talk to his wife, Sarah, about being Brian for Halloween. I take that back. Brian cosplayed as the Unipiper because he brought a shovel and made some snow out of cotton balls. So he was cosplaying that video that went viral.
The viral shoveling video.
So yes, Brian did cosplay as himself. So there you go. That's pretty meta. Not as meta as as Kato Kaelin being there, but you'll hear about that later. So let's go to Brian right now, and then we will come back and we'll do some news, and we will talk about hypnosis. So we'll go to Brian here.
Unipiper.
Well, hello, Brian. How are you?
Hi, Brian.
Hey guys, how are you?
We're well.
Is it tired where you are after after that convention?
Oh my god, yeah. I couldn't move my legs today. I didn't know I had legs.
Oh, I bet you were riding. Yeah, so we were at the Wizard World convention over this past weekend at the Unipiper booth, and yeah, you were out and about and around and everywhere.
Unipiping everywhere.
Piping it all over the place.
Yeah, we spent a lot of hours together and we're still talking.
I know.
I feel like that's a new chapter in our friendship.
We kind of joke about it, but that is kind of a big deal. It's been like three 3 days around other people in the tiny booth and like not want to kill the person by the end of it. But I don't think I was really all that even annoyed even once. So
yeah, this was a fun time.
So what are your memories for people that weren't able to go? How would you kind of sum up the event? Hello.
Technical difficulty.
Oh, there you are.
Oh, we're back.
And we're back.
So how far away did I cut out? I was just kind of asking what was your overall impression of the weekend for people who weren't there or able to go.
It was an interesting show. It was different from any other that I'd been to in the past. I feel like these sorts of geek-centric gatherings are in a state of evolution.
Yeah.
There were some personal highlights for me, and there were some things that I thought were a first this year. One of my personal highlights, the highlight of the show for me personally, was the moment where I got to open up for Charles Martinet, the voice of Super Mario, before his Q&A. I got to dress up myself as Mario and ride around the crowd and play some Mario tunes on the bagpipes.
That was really cool. And the way that you were able to do that is because the evening before he was out signing autographs and you had dressed up in your Mario costume and then rode past where he was signing, playing the Mario theme. And he loved it. And he was just the nicest guy and invited you over and wanted to take a picture and had you do it again. And he was the coolest guy.
His personal assistant was there with him. And I was talking to her and I asked her, I was like, is this guy, you know, is he this excited all of the time? And she was like, he is so full of life.
Wow.
And that is just a perfect way to describe him.
That's really cool.
It is cool to know that like the person behind Mario is as happy as you would expect Mario to be.
Totally. Totally.
What were some of your highlights?
Well, I just kind of enjoyed it. It was my first experience, not at a convention, but being kind of at a booth. And I kind of liked it because you got to see everyone, but like you got to keep a kind of a safe distance away. You got to, and I always enjoy going to things where you do kind of get the proverbial backstage pass, where you kind of get to, you know, kind of go in and out as you please and not feel trapped and kind of get to see all the loading docks and all those boring nerdy kind of theater things. So I had a great time. I thought it was really fun. I could see how it seemed oddly managed, and I remember the first night we were there, we were setting up and I saw one of the Coin 6 newscasters a couple feet away, and I joked to you, I said, hey, there's Cato Kaelin. And then it turned out it was actually Cato Kaelin. And it took us 3 days to figure out why in the world Cato Kaelin was there, because nobody under the age of 40 knew who he was. People over the age of 40 kind of vaguely recognized the name, but couldn't remember like who or why he was. And it took somebody saying,
I know what you're about to say, but I don't agree with it. Okay. Go on.
Okay. So I was somebody mentioned like, oh, well, he was in Sharknado 7 or like whatever next Sharknado that they're on. And then it dawned on me, because there was this really strange push for millennials at this convention, that they thought because he was in Sharknado, which is a big deal, maybe he would draw in the younger crowd. And I could be, Mark, what is your...
Is Sharknado a big deal to the millennials?
Here's the deal. They're
still making them.
They are still making them. They are still... And isn't something that was popular 4 years ago exactly the thing that somebody our age would think millennials were into?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. I guess what you're saying is that was the thinking, not the actual...
Result. Yes. Oh, okay. Absolutely. Okay. Yes. There was no one there for Cato Kaelin,
right?
Regardless of their age.
Yeah.
But the only reason I think that is because that is literally the only connection to anything other than the O.J. Simpson trial, which has nothing to do with
Comic-Con. Doesn't he host a show of some sort? He hosts. Maybe. He's a host.
He's a
personality.
Do you know Brian?
No, I just have to get this story off my chest. I think I told you, Todd, but I saw Cato Kaelin. He was like the MC of the entertainment that was happening, and he's trying to just fill time, and he's doing a trivia contest, and he's walking around to different tables interviewing different attractive young women, and he's asking them a question. He's like, okay, and how do you spell Kaelin, as in Cato Kaelin? And this girl has no idea, and she completely butchers it, and he literally says, well, you're cute, so I'm gonna give it to you anyway. And what does she win but an autographed photo of Cato Kaelin?
Yes.
Oh,
and I actually sort of summed it up for me.
And the next night, and I think I told one of the other people that were helping, I think you were out and about, but I was walking to get to the bathrooms. You kind of walked past the stage. And when we say he was the MC for the entertainment was lots of dubstep versions of the Star Wars theme with people like twirling hula hoops and maybe some fire.
The cheerleaders for the Winterhawks, the local hockey team,
oh, really?
They were there.
Okay, I didn't see them.
There was a mariachi band dressed, yeah. And they were dressed as superheroes. Those were the ones I recall. Oh, there was a magician.
There was a magician. Illusionist.
Illusionist and Michael. Juggler who had a lot quantity of banter. Like he had
too much banter
he
for a juggler.
Filled a half an hour with banter.
Banter.
I barely knew her.
Juggler.
I barely knew.
But when I was going past that stage while he was doing one of the like filling times in between, and he was kind of doing crowd work, so he was off the stage and down, like walking through the crowd, trying to talk to the pretty girls. And somehow, and I missed how it came up, but the word trial came up, and he was talking about, oh, I was in a trial once, and then he followed, and he had started speaking that way as if you could totally tell he had tried to do stand up, because he launched into that mode, and he's like, hey, I still all buy all my things in trial size, hey now, and I was like, oh no. So yeah, that was certainly very interesting. But wow. They also had the millennial push had the Twitch booth, which no one over the age of 30 would just stand there and like wonder what it was or why.
Yeah, it was very loud too.
Yeah, lots of exclaiming excitedly as they played their games. So yeah that was it was funny to see all the old people, because there was another part, and it was kind of part of the convention, but not really a social media type convention, and they had a
social
concert
con.
At Social Con, and they had a concert with maybe 5 or 6 YouTube and social media stars, so some singers and some there was like at one and out of everything that was there that this weekend, nothing had more response than those social media stars, because they were screaming.
What?
Preteen girls that were going am I wrong, Brian?
No, for this was for a solid hour and a half, and it only ratcheted up like exponentially.
What?
The entire time.
It was like the Backstreet Boys were there, and it was 1996 or whenever they were.
It was a scene from A Hard Day's Night. Like,
it was.
Played out.
It
and
was
I've
crazy.
I've never witnessed that myself, and to have that at a Comic-Con was crazy. I feel like it was an identity crisis of sorts for Comic-Con, and they're trying to reach a new audience, and they didn't know what direction to go, and they just went in a strange direction.
Yeah, that was really interesting, and that was funny, because all of those girls were like freaking out, and the little teeny boppers were, and there was like legitimately he was like a 10-year-old boy was singing up there, and they're all going crazy, and then way on the periphery was like all the adults just staring in like baffled disbelief at what was going on around them.
Yeah, they were in the beer garden.
Yeah, that's true. well, any last thoughts on the Comic-Con? I mean, I had a great time there. It was cool to see, and there were lots of great costumes.
Yeah, I was going to touch on the costumes. Were there any that stood out to you? I know my favorite was You know, that there are just a few that have stood out to me over the years where there are some that are just creative interpretations of characters. And then there are some people who just, you have to do a triple take because you swear that it is that character.
Yeah.
And there was a man there doing the Bryan Cranston Walter White that was uncanny. And he showed up each day of the con in a slightly different Walter White outfit.
I saw him. He was amazing.
I really had to study his face, and I searched for a photo of him afterwards just to make sure it wasn't him.
Right.
But it wasn't. It was just a fantastic costume. So that was the one that stood out for me this year.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking through some pictures here on my desktop. Oh, another part of the entertainment was when they were playing the dubstep Star Trek themes. It was two people wearing these weird plastic cat heads. Like, if you think of the mascot costumes, but instead of it being furry, it's kind of like this Daft Punk-esque Black Panther head thing. It was so weird. But there was a Queen Amidala that was pretty awesome, because she was the Queen Amidala that had the two pieces of hair bundles that went off to the side, and she like wearing the red dress and the kind of the kabuki makeup, and that hair stood out at least like 2 feet on either side of her, which is pretty good. There was, I mean, and you do see a lot of Mandalorians and a lot of Darth Vaders, but there was a couple. There was a Boba Fett there and a Darth Vader there that were so spot on. It might be one of the most spot on Boba Fetts that I'd ever seen that I really liked. That and the Galactus Eater of Worlds was pretty fantastic, because he had a full purple costume that looked like it was made out of like custom foam stuff, and he had lights all kind of up and down it. And then he had, you pointed out this, Brian, he had this tiny thing coming off his shoulder that I couldn't figure out. And it ended up, it was a 2-scale Silver Surfer. So it's like this really tiny Silver Surfer coming off of his shoulder. That was really funny.
Yeah, he was great, because he came up to me and he was just excited to get a photo with the Unipiper, and I was excited to get a photo with him.
Yeah. Oh, that, and I didn't see her, but I think Sarah, your wife, posted a picture of the little girl in the Seymour costume, the Seymour plant costume.
Oh, that was cute.
Yeah, I saw her getting dressed outside, but I didn't see her walking around. It was just adorable, like this little 3-year-old girl in the Seymour costume from Little Shop of Horrors. So
she had no idea what she was doing.
No, but she was having a great time. So yeah. Well, is there anything else coming up that you can tell us about?
Yeah, there's a few things I wanted to give a shout out to this week, because this is the Mark and Todd cast and this is how we do things. I wanted to mention the David Duchovny concert that took place on Friday that you are not able to go to.
David Duchovny concert?
Not only is it in the past, but it was sold out. So even if you could time travel, you'd have to fight for a ticket.
Does David Duchovny sing?
Yes, he does, and he was actually at the Aladdin Theater on Friday, which means he was in town probably during Comic-Con.
Ooh, he might have been there.
So maybe he just got lost and, you know, wound up at the music venue and I was like, oh, well, I guess I'll do this instead.
Now, maybe I'll use that as in the end of show cut, is I'll find David Duchovny singing somewhere.
Yeah, he has like this one single, and it's actually not too bad, knowing it's David Duchovny.
Right.
Hell or High Water.
I think that's it, yeah.
Yep.
Huh, interesting. All right, well, there's that, I guess.
There was that. So if this ends up getting posted tonight, I realize we're not on Facebook Live at the moment, but tonight at Dante's, they are having a CD release party for the first full-length Portland Elvis album.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Portland's own Elvis, street performer of Saturday Market fame, is releasing a full-length CD. The name is incredible, and one of Elvis's, the real Elvis's greatest hits album was 50 Million Elvis Fans Can't Be Wrong. So they're releasing 57 Elvis Fans Can't Be Wrong tonight. That party is getting started at 8:30 and it's going to go until closing. So hurry up down to Dante's tonight for a true Portland experience.
Wow, nice.
And then one item of note in the ever-changing Portland landscape. Another vestige of old Portland is shuttering its windows. This is going to be your very last week to get down to the immortal Immortal Piano Company on Belmont. That's a staple. If you've driven by the green and white neon sign, you've seen that it's a company that's been in business for, I believe, something like 39 years, and they fix up old pianos and refurbish them, and it truly is a dying art.
Wow.
And they are going out of business this week. It's a very iconic Portland institution.
Oh, bummer.
There, check it out if you want a great deal on a piano. They say they have some left, and they're selling them at crazy prices. It's gonna
prices
apparently
are insane.
Insane. It's gonna be another weed store.
Oh come on! No, that's
that
stinks.
It does.
Unless it becomes 70 years from now, like some iconic store. But right now, it stinks.
Right.
So, we'll leave it on a downer.
Oh, well. Well, if people want to find out more about you, what can they do?
They should go over to unipiper.com, check me out on Facebook, where this week I'll be posting some brand new Unipiper merchandise. I've got new shirts and stickers that I just debuted at Comic-Con. And then I wanted to also give a quick shout out to, in addition to yourself, Todd, to my good friends Brian and Crystal, for both helping me run the Unipiper booth at Comic-Con this weekend. And they were both, they had fantastic costumes. Brian was Han Solo for a while, and his wife Crystal was a really great Leia. So thank you, Brian and Crystal. Couldn't have done it without you guys.
Yeah, it was a great weekend, and it was a great time. And the one thing, and I know we've kind of gone long here, but the one thing that I love about not just Comic-Cons like that, but anything, because I mean, it's easy to kind of poke fun at, you know, the people that go to that or dress up. And to me, anything that someone just has that unashamed passion for and just enjoyment of, I think, I mean, no matter what it is, it could be sports, it could be cart, like it could be anything, but
the
men in the rubber mask. Well, maybe not them. That's where I draw the line. But it's just, it was so neat to see. I mean, there was all different levels of kind of costumes that people had made, you know, from really bad to really great. But just, I mean, there's something about just that enjoyment of who you could be when you were in that convention. And that was really awesome.
It really shows through. Anything with passion and there's something to be really appreciated and celebrated there.
Totally, totally. Well, thanks for joining us again. And we will talk to you later.
Okay. Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye.
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 425. Anyone else that you want to get out of the way? Oh, did you share our?
I didn't share it on our. So those people that are listening, you can share it on your page. It helps us out a lot.
Ooh, Jared Butler is watching now. That's kind of.
I like Jared.
I like Jared too. I always wondered though, like when you do watch videos, I'm kind of bummed that you can't spy on people. Like, oh, now he went away. They're just talking about him, but like you can't just like peek in on something and it'll like flash that you are watching.
Well, by the time you remember, there's like a 15 second delay, so was probably gone by the time you said anything. So he was hoping that you had said something, but he was gone by that time already.
All right, let's come back from. Oh, why don't we do some Small Wonder? Fantastic. Oh, boo.
She's fantastic.
She's fantastic. Made of plastic.
Oh, that never gets old to me. So I did pull quite a bit of news that I'm gonna have you read so that I don't talk too much. So I'll be excited to know what these stories are about, because while I did pull them, as I told you earlier, I have no idea what their real content is. So,
cool. Well, we are now upon the second wettest Portland ever in history.
Wow.
And so the. And that was as of today, which was the 20th. We still have another week left. And so the last record breaking was the February of 1996 that we had the flooding and torrential craziness.
That was before I came, so I missed that by a couple of years, but I've seen the pictures of all that. It's just crazy.
It was ridiculous. And Nick went down to Oregon City and like snuck past the National Guard for photography. And he had like a little boat that he like brought a canoe.
Gosh.
And got some great pictures back in the day of Oregon City underwater.
Wow.
Along with that, we had more sewage spill into... the Willamette.
Surprise. So are they doing, you may or may not know this, but have they finished that big, whatever they call it, the big pipe or whatever thing that was supposed to solve the problem of?
Well, this one was down in Salem, not directly in the Portland metro area, but the heavy rains again overwhelmed Salem's sewage system early Thursday, caused an unauthorized release of diluted raw sewage into the Willamette River. So it took place at Union Street and Church Street at about 3:20 a.m. And but Thursday, 2.12 inches of rain was just received in 24 hours. That was just torrential downpours.
And I guess we just proved it, but even for here, it's just been raining a lot and just hard rain. But at least it hasn't been. My parents were here a couple weeks ago. They're down in California now. They're in the middle of the rains and flooding in California. But they live on the east side of the Cascade Mountains in eastern Washington. And when they came here 2 weeks ago, by that point they had 80 days of snow on the ground, which if you don't know Sunnyside, it's named Sunnyside for a reason. Like 97% of the days there is complete sunshine. Wow. And they do get some snow, but it's been like 10 school closures that they've done over there. And it's just, so I'm glad all that ice and snow didn't stick around here.
Yeah. So YouTube has just announced that they have now 1 billion videos with closed captioning. However, they're not all very accurate. So I just watched a movie trailer. So I saw Manchester by the Sea about a week ago, and it's a magnificent movie. It's made by Amazon Studios, and it's a really, really heavy.
I hear it's quite the downer. Yeah, on a strong day. Well,
we watched it. Nick and I watched it Valentine's evening, and that was a terrible idea.
Back to back with Requiem for a Dream,
right?
And
right.
Blue Valentine or whatever.
So I watched the trailer, which has auto-populated captions, and it's terrible. You can't. They're worse than the Chinese English on this one, because they're robot generated. They're the computer generated. It's not a person typing, and so it's trying to discern, amongst music and swelling sound effects and explosions and everything. It's trying to pick out the individual voices and it just doesn't.
And I did know that, I think I brought it up a long time ago once we posted our first Facebook Live video on YouTube, and I had noted that there were captions there they were pretty accurate, but because it's only our voices, probably.
Right. I barely knew her.
I barely.
I wonder
if they got that one wrong.
I do want to see a closed caption of that.
I wonder if they indicate robot voice.
Robot voice. I barely knew her.
It is pretty. Our brains, like, we take so much for granted, but the fact that our brains don't have a problem picking out those sound waves, knowing what's a human voice, what's worth listening to, what the music is, and how to differentiate all that, but all put it together. It's just nuts.
I know that was the worst attempt to act like I had listened to you, but see, you put a string of news articles that I actually had to read, and I didn't pre-read them. And so I'm queuing up the next one, and I was hoping to just not listen to you and acknowledge your voice, and that it didn't work at all. I'm so sorry. I have no idea what you were talking about.
That was amazing.
So,
oh, hi, Mark.
clever new water bottle tricks your brain into thinking regular H2O is flavored.
Yeah.
How does it do this? And that's what I had to read ahead.
Okay, okay.
And so it's got a scented silicone nozzle on it, which gives the hint of that that scent and that flavor to your brain while you're drinking it. And so you're just drinking regular old water, but you think your brain says, oh, this is watermelon water.
Right.
And yeah.
Which, I mean, and that is the, one of the experiments we always did in when I taught after school science classes is you got a roll of lifesavers, you know, and you plug your nose and it's really hard to differentiate what the different flavors are with when you're robbed of the smell of things. So it does make sense that that would kind of work. I don't know how much it would trick your brain into like thinking it was actually flavored, but it was probably, and they come with four different flavors. It's an actual water bottle.
It's a water bottle. Yeah. And so it is also a Kickstarter and it hasn't reached its funding level yet. Aww. So it's about halfway there and it's got 23 days to go. So it's on track to get funded.
It does sound like a neat idea.
Yeah. Yeah. Great idea. And it, there's 30 of those left. So one water bottle for $20.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah. For this great
water bottle. Is there anything more loathsome than having to store there's water bottles?
Five flavors: grape, strawberry, orange, watermelon, and cola.
Cola? What does cola smell like?
Cola berry. It's a berry. Bean. It's a berry that dries out into a bean.
Much like a coffee bean. It's a cola bean.
Cola bean.
My soda grows on trees.
It does. That's what it is.
I don't know why that makes me laugh. It's there's a short circuit in my brain sometime about things like that. And you'll eagle-eared listeners will notice that I think I've done it twice during the course of all our shows where my brain confuses pepper with coming from rocks. Because salt comes from rocks and pepper flakes are very sharp and rocky. And so my brain always puts it together that salt and pepper are both minerals made from some sort of rock. And so twice, I think, on the show, I've made some sort of joke that relied on the fact that pepper is a mineral from a salt or from a rock.
From a rock.
And of course, they just land flat and you never have any idea. And so I always like quickly brush them away so that nobody would notice. So now they all...
There is a marketer that is reveling right now in Himalayan salt, because for the world's history, anything that wasn't white salt, it's just got impurities in it that make it pink.
Right.
And so it's not good salt. It is the impure salt.
Right.
And they took that and said, you know what we should do? Charge more for it. Call it special.
Yeah.
And Himalayans are now the salt makers of the universe.
The salt capitals of the world. I always wonder, like, when everything's like with sea salt. I mean, salt is salt, right?
Well, it's not iodized salt.
Is that what the distinction is supposed to be?
It's like, yeah, we should do a whole episode on salt.
On salt.
Jot that down. Because there's iodized salt. There's sea salt. There's kosher salt. There's culinary salt.
Right.
There's Himalayan. The salt of the earth. There's Himalayan salt.
Salt lamps.
There's the salt treaty from 1992.
There are salty people. The singing Psalter hymnal. Salt. There's a whole book, actually, and I have not read it, but I've heard it's actually really, really fascinating. It's just called Salt, and it's the history of salt in the world and all that. So look for the Cliff Notes version of the Mark and Todd cast soon.
The United Arab Emirates has committed to being the first city on Mars, settling the first city on Mars in the next 100 years. By 2117, they are going to settle a city. And if anybody has money to do that and can also bring a thriving metropolis out of a barren wasteland, It's the UAE.
Just like home.
Just like home. This place has more trees than home.
So I was trying to, I was having a conversation with one of Colin's older brothers. About, I was telling him about the Dubai because there was, they announced a new rotating skyscraper of some kind. Right. So I was showing him the video and I was trying to explain, like, what is Dubai? Like, what are the United Arab Emirates? Like, where are they? I mean, it's obviously oil money, but it seems like all of a sudden, I mean, it has to be like the gangsters of the Middle East. I mean, this clearly is the Las Vegas of. Okay, so there's no, that's well known, then that's not like I'm not uncovering.
You know
some
what the
sort of
difference
scandalous...
is between the people from Dubai and Abu Dhabi, right? So the people from Dubai hate the Flintstones, but the people from Abu Dhabi do.
Oh, hi, Mark.
So the
I actually, in my heart of hearts, I was hoping it would be some sort of aural play on Abu Dhabi because it's so fun to say.
It is funny. It's a funny word. Yeah. So I there's a ridiculous amount of money in oil, obviously. And and they've like leveraged it over time that now it's crazy. Like I remember talking with parents and stuff when I was a kid in the 80s about the crazy money in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And I remember like the bar at that time was if somebody's car broke down, they just left it and bought another one. Like that was the bar for like filthy rich.
Right.
And I think now like if it, there's no limit of anything. And there's,
well, I mean, if somehow, I mean, this would only exist in a crazy alternate reality where we can somehow power our things using using substances other than oil, but.
Spanner.
Yeah.
So Google just released their cloud computing database. It's called Spanner. And it's a relational database that is available for cloud computing. So they've got a database that that is used by their AdWords system and by Gmail, both obviously used across the world and have needs for incredible scalability and incredible transaction ability of if you update something and you are in Dubai, that same
Abu Dhabi.
Same transaction, you know, that same record, even though it's distributed across the world, you don't just have one server in one room that is the AdWords server it's spread across databases across the entire world. You need that database that's spread across the world to always be updated with itself. And keeping that synchronized and keeping that up to date is an incredibly difficult task. And they've created a database that has a latency of, they claim, single-digit millisecond latency across the planet. And so they're able to... When I make this updated transaction here, it is instantly updated across the entire database network. Hmm. And so that's their claim. It's they've mastered time is how they're marketing it. And nice. So it's available for data, online applications now. It's called Spanner.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, when I flagged that story, do you know what I thought Spanner was?
No.
I thought
a wrench.
No. I thought it was that thing where it was a Google Photos things where now they've been taking photos for like 2 decades. You could see the change because I saw photo gallery come by of like you could see how the river wound. But I'm glad that story was still interesting. But
it was interesting to me as a web developer.
Yeah, so.
And I went with
it. It was my present to you.
Thanks. Die Hard coders just rescued NASA's Earth science data. And so this Saturday morning, the white stone buildings on UC Berkeley's campus radiated with unfiltered sunshine. And this is a longer story than I was prepared for.
Let's get comfortable here. I'm realizing that I forgot my pillow to sit on.
Let's see. I have
I think long story short is that because there is now more and more restrictions on what government agencies can publish as far as the environment on
Right. So as data is a commodity, and the new administration is torching things to the ground, we want to make sure.
I was on board with you're like, wow, he is threading this line. I can't wait to the and we're done.
Groups like Data Refuge and the Environmental Data and Governance Initiative, which organized the Berkeley Hackathon to collect data from NASA's Earth Science Programs and the Department of Energy, are doing more than archivings. These diehard coders are building robust systems to monitor ongoing changes to government websites. So they are they're archiving the data, and they're looking for how are the EPA websites, like, how are they being modified over time?
Right.
And so the reports that they come out with, the data that they present, the information that is publicly available, how is that being modified over a period of time?
Interesting.
And so that's what
it's kind of like. It's kind of like the edit history in Wikipedia.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is always fun.
Interesting.
Fun
and exciting, and it is funny. And this is, I guess, the conservative in me that I grew up as, is that so many of the things that are happening as a result of just the political atmosphere are things that probably we should have been doing anyway. Like, people are like, well, I'm finally watching news, or like, we're finally backing up this data somewhere else than letting the government deal with it. It's like, these are all things that I hope will kickstart a thing of like, we need to be less reliant on making sure the government is just doing it for us, and that we're taking the initiative and we're taking ownership of some of this stuff. The end.
The end. And scene. The cephalopods are in the news. So a new study published in Current Biology has revealed some startling statistics.
Do you think that Current is a biology? Play on words?
No, yes.
Wow. Current
Biology. A group of researchers from the University of Adelaide have found that since the 1950s, the population of cephalopods, octopus, squid, and cuttlefish in the world's oceans has exploded. What makes this truly curious is the fact that climate change, overfishing, and ocean acidification.
Hey now, look at me.
Have caused the numbers of many fish and shellfish species to plummet during the same period. So
their food is going away, but they're multiplying somehow.
The food, and so people they don't have a specific answer for why. So they don't know what is causing the explosion, but of quantity of a population of these fish, cephalopods, not fish. Sorry, Brian.
Do you know what cephalopod stands for?
It's
not a joke. No,
I don't.
Head foot.
Oh, you like what?
The word? Cephalopod. Cephalo meaning head, pod meaning foot.
Head foot.
I don't know why they chose that of all things, but they were probably like, what? Head foot. I can't look at it anymore.
One idea is that humans have killed off large numbers of predatory fish that would normally compete with the cephalopods for food. But it's also possible that these species are simply better equipped to deal with rising ocean temperatures than some other animals. Uh-huh. So,
well, they've been around almost unchanged since before dinosaur times.
Yep.
And I think I've said it many times, but as soon as they can figure out how to breathe air, we're all going to die, because they're smart and they're freakishly adaptable. They can change shape and color. One of these days we should do a show on them, but it just seems like there's so much, like, they are aliens.
Yes.
They are aliens. And
you've seen the video of the resorts that they take to camouflage, the camouflage. Oh my gosh.
Yes. I have seen there's one particular GIF, and it's kind of like this rock in the, you know, on a sandy thing, and it gets closer and closer, and then all of a sudden poof, turns into an octopus, and the octopus
flies away.
And I've seen it 100,000 times, and I still cannot find where that thing is until it changes color and shape and swims away.
Yeah.
It is just crazy. So, yeah.
Unfortunately, this isn't all good news for the species involved.
Oh.
Researchers warn that if the numbers of cephalopods rise too much, the animals may be forced to resort to cannibalism due to lack of food.
Huh.
As they take over large portions of the marine ecosystem, they also may be harvested in greater numbers and become a more important staple in the human diet. Either way, the cephalopod population boom is likely to be a mixed blessing for the species involved.
Huh. Interesting.
And we have.
I have a
news on the march.
I can play. It'll be a little bit of time.
There's a noted drop in teen suicide after gay marriage legalized. I did see this headline. I haven't read.
It's
the
a super yet. Long article, but yeah. I mean that's. It kind of boils down the facts.
Yes, 7% following implementation of same-sex marriage laws in that region. So I worked as a volunteer at a youth center for gay, lesbian, trans youth for a number of years, about 10 years ago. And it's startling the rate of homelessness, the rate of suicide, the rate of self-harm, and just you know, the raised level of tension and everything when a youth is trying to identify themselves and sees a massive disconnect between themselves and the humans that they are going to become, the adults in their life. And so it absolutely makes sense that as same-sex marriage becomes legalized and you see a gay male couple or a lesbian couple get married, you're like, oh, that's something that's normal and that's something I can be or do. And it's not like they're recruiting them. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just a,
that was my,
one of the options.
I remember that, the episode of Ellen, when she came out at the very end, Laura Dern, who was the guest star on that, was in a scene shown receiving a toaster as a gift for recruiting Ellen into being gay. That was her prize for recruiting Ellen. It was a toaster.
And so it absolutely makes sense.
Yeah.
And is awesome.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic news. So,
okay, we have so many comments to catch up on. Hold on. So, I want carbonated. I don't know what that was about.
For cola? Cola berry? Carbonated cola berry?
So the carbonated, I want the taste of carbonated.
You could make, they could probably make cola pop rocks.
They do? Yes.
They say.
Well, I was researching pop rocks for the, for the blindfold dinner.
For my eating later.
Did you know they make culinary pop rocks that are unflavored?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so you can just add them to anything else and it makes them all pop rocky.
That is amazing.
Yeah. So that's a thing.
Crap. It was just my birthday, too.
And so Emily Workhoven says, hi, Uncle Todd.
Oh, hi, Em.
Jocelyn, who she's very experienced on salts and she has a culinary store down the street. Silly fact, Himalayan salt is actually Pakistani.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
But Pakistani salt just doesn't sell as easily. So they sell it as Himalayan.
I wonder if that's trademark. Like how can they get away with this? But
That's mountains.
And do so you it's think like they technically stretch all
Rocky
the way
Mountain
to...
oysters. The Rocky Mountains aren't
trademarked.
Trademarked.
I mean, anyway, yeah. Interesting.
Huh. Pakistani salt.
Pakistani
Maybe
salt.
Maybe we could start a new thing.
Pakistani pepper.
Pakistani pepper and Himalayan
from
salt.
The rocks of,
from the rocks.
From the rocky hills of Pakistan. Pepper.
Oh, okay. And one final. The new Lucky Charms and cinnamon toast oatmeal flavors have a lot of grown-ups very excited.
Nouns. Stuff. There's things.
So many words in that sentence.
Lucky Charms and Cinnamon Toast Crunch are going to be oatmeal flavors.
Okay, so I was reading that as I can get Lucky Charms in the flavor of oatmeal, which sounded terrible. I like
worst
why would
idea
I
ever? That's for the moms who make
but getting
carob
oatmeal. Welcome to my childhood. But getting oatmeal in the flavor of Lucky Charms,
yeah.
And or cinnamon toast.
I can see that now. I'm looking at that headline: new Lucky Charms and cinnamon toast oatmeal flavors. They could use some punctuation or maybe perhaps some italicized things.
Phrasing. Yeah. And so there's a lot going on there.
There's a lot going on there. I think the bottom line is that it's available in Canada, and they don't know if it's going to be able to come to the United States.
Come on, so Canada.
Have to have Canada.
One more
some
reason to move to Canada.
I know, right? You can have free health care for the diabetes you get after
just
eating your Lucky Charms oatmeal.
Sprinkle some culinary Pop Rocks on them. And and Heidi Lauman says, all Pop Rocky.
All Pop Rocky. Yeah. Ooh, I need your
power.
Your power cord.
Power.
Power. So I wanted to talk today about something that I actually didn't know that you knew anything about, but you seemed very excited.
I know quite a bit about hypnotism.
Quite a bit about. So a long time ago, I forget it was in a used bookstore or something. I found this really cool old book from the 40s about hypnotism, and I've just kind of leafed through it, and it's mostly a guide of different methods. There's some great woodcuts in here. Look at that.
Yes.
A guide of how to hypnotize, and I'd seen hypnotism done at like the state fair and stuff like that a couple times, and it's always one of those things where I've struggled with, like, is it a real thing? It certainly can't be all made up because I've seen too many of those shows, right, for it to like be feasible, and just what it was, and that kind of came into play with the one of the only facts that I can seem to retain in my life is that there's this man, which we'll talk about here in a little bit, named Franz Mesmer.
Of course.
And Franz Mesmer is the reason we have the word mesmerizing, because he was the father of mesmerizing, which was what they started calling hypnotism around the mid to late 1700s. So you look like you're excited. Is it nothing?
No, I was just thinking, like, did they keep his skull so that you could have the mesmerize of... Like, have those preserved
into
a
couple windows open to have
these are mesmerize.
Anyway, so Franz Mesmer is considered the father of the modern era of hypnosis. Hypnosis has been obviously around since the beginning of time, and it's been recorded in different ways, and it's been blamed or attributed to sorcery and witchcraft and black magic, and until Franz Mesmer. Before him, it was kind of in that category of the occult, and he kind of brought it out, even though he himself was accused kind of later of being a charlatan and all that stuff. But he was kind of, Franz Mesmer was kind of disappointed in the way that medicine was being done. A lot of it was like literally just bleeding people, the purgatives and opiates, and just the kind of the medieval approach to a lot of medicine. And he started noticing that, he started studying all those old theories on what was happening in the old stories that they used to blame on demons. Like, is this thing really real? And so one of the cases, this is kind of tangential, but I found it super interesting. So when I was looking up cases, like, have there been things of mass, not mass hysteria, but mass hypnotism, or mass, like, does that happen in a massive stuff? There is a thing called dancing mania. And dancing mania has also been known as the dancing plague or choreomania. But it was a social phenomenon that happened in Europe a couple times between the 14th and 17th centuries. And it involved groups of people dancing erratically, sometimes thousands at a time, men, women, and children all just dancing until they collapsed from exhaustion. There was a outbreak in 1374 in the Roman Empire, and that one quickly spread. One notable outbreak occurred in Stansburg, I don't know, in the Holy Roman Empire in 1518. So these are like hundreds of years apart, affecting thousands of different people. It isn't a form of hypnosis, but it is, it does kind of come from that same place of trance. And trance is something that is legitimate and measurable. And it's and we all kind of do it sometimes if we're totally tuned out watching a television show. Or I remember driving through Northern California where it's just ugly straight I-5 with brown fields on both sides forever. And I was driving up to Washington from Southern California and listening probably at that time to some sort of like pop music that just had a driving, you know, thumping beat. And I realized at one point like that I'd gone like 15 minutes like really without realizing or consciously. And so that trance like state, I mean, it can comes from music and it can come from breathing and exercise, but when Mesmer was trying to figure out, he was really influenced by Isaac Newton and gravity and the moon's pull and tides. And so his theory, he started this movement of called animal magnetism. And animal magnetism was the tidal influence on the body. Just like it pulls on the ocean, it pulls on us, and we have this certain amount of animal magnetism. And so his breakthrough was this woman named, a 27-year-old woman named Franzel Osterlein. And she was suffering, which, and this is a great fantastic description that it might as well say she had the vapors. So she had what was described as a convulsive malady. The most troublesome symptoms were that blood rushed to her head, causing delirium, rage, vomiting, and swooning. And so Franz Mesmer told her that he was going to disrupt the gravitational tides. And he used like a series of mesmerizing hand movements and speech and induced the sensation that her body was being drained of the bad things and the toxins were going with it. And she completely healed like almost immediately. And it was almost instantaneous that, so Hans Mesmer, Hans, Franz. I'm just going to call him Hans. Hans and Franz.
Hans and Franz.
Saw that something had worked, but he didn't, like, he thought it was, and he knew that it wasn't the magnet. It was, I mean, it was almost like Inception, where you were causing someone to think themselves out of the situation. And that's still, and we'll talk about it a little bit more. There is a difference between that and the placebo effect. So those aren't the same thing. So that was kind of his breakthrough. And he kind of became a celebrity. He went on tour doing these demonstrations of people being hypnotized of all people, Benjamin Franklin and John Guillotine, who were contemporaries of him, were like, this is clearly hucksterism. Like, he's hypnotizing these people and like they're clucking like chickens or like whatever you do in those shows.
Right.
And so they investigated him through the Royal Commission, a Royal Commission that was set up. And they just completely disregarded it because they're like, these magnets aren't doing anything. They did the same thing where they touched, magnetized this and that, and like clearly none of it held up. And so they completely just called him a charlatan and he was disreputed. And so he was right Franz Mesmer for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And they were wrong for the right reasons,
right,
which was that weird confluence. So there is actual physiology that goes along with just the what is happening when you see someone hypnotized.
Okay.
And so it's that what they define is it's a trance-like state. There's extreme suggestibility, relaxation, and heightened imagination. It's different than sleep because you are awake and alert.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to daydreaming or like when you totally zone out, sort of that thing. Your brain grows and is one thing that does not happen, excuse me, is that you will not do things that you previously wouldn't do. So like I can't go murder someone, or I can't,
right,
like go take off your clothes and run down the street. Like, well, I would never do that anyway. So, and there are people that can and can't be hypnotized, and they said there's a trait, and I didn't research whether or not that was a genetic trait, which I doubt, but I think it's more of the personality. Like, right, I don't think I would ever be able to be hypnotized because I can't let go of the thing that needs to be removed in order for me to be hypnotized. So
right,
some people can, it's basically what it does is it allows your subconscious mind to come to the forefront. It gets right where your subconscious mind is right now working hand in hand with our conscious mind. Our conscious mind thinks it's doing all the things, but it's just relaying information to our subconscious mind, which then tells us to do the things that we think we
right
do. Meanwhile, we're breathing, our cells right are dividing, we're fighting cold, like all of that stuff, all the important things that we need to stay alive are taken away from us so that we don't like completely mess them up. So what the hypnosis does is that it subdues that conscious mind. It allows you to be open to any of the suggestions that your conscious mind would be like, oh, this is silly, or I'm not going to do that. So that's why when you go to the fair, you see people like cluck like chickens or
right
like do whatever. It can also mess with your body sensations because it's your subconscious mind that, you know, tells you if you're cold or hot or if you're sweaty or you have emotions. So that's why it looks like, and again, at those shows, like you can make them feel like they're cold or super hot because
right
it's taking the part of your mind that's like, it's not hot in here. It takes that away and just makes you really warm. One thing it can't, or it's very unreliable at, is the recovered memory phenomenon. I went under hypnosis and I found out, you know, that my dad was an alien or whatever.
Right.
And those are just notoriously unreliable because the suggestibility is so heightened in that state. I mean, you can make them think they're a chicken, let alone
right
like have these memories. As far as actual physical change, there's not much different than being in like just a super relaxed state. So if you would hook someone up to a heart monitor or whatever, it wouldn't look any different than if they were just, you know, meditating or just very relaxed. But there is a lot of change in the brain activity. And so using both, do you know the difference between do you know what an EEG is? Do you know what it stands for?
I don't remember. It's electrical.
Yeah, electrical. Electroencephalograph.
Encephalograph.
I don't know. That's the only one. I have a number. I have PET scan coming up, so you can
okay
think about what PET scan means. But they, with EEGs, they were able to look at the cerebral cortex, the left hemisphere and the right hemisphere. The left hemisphere is what controls logic, deduction, reasoning, all of that stuff. The right side is the imagination, creativity, all of that. So during hypnosis, the activity of the left hemisphere, which is that logic side, is reduced. And the activity in the right hemisphere, which is that imagination, spontaneity, impulsiveness, that's all increased. Another thing they could measure is that they would show someone a black and white picture, and they would say, you know, you see a black and white picture, and then they say, but now imagine this is a color picture.
Mm-hmm.
And they can see the different areas of the brain being affected are the same ones that are active in hypnosis. It's that imagining, it's that creating, and they could do it with music too. And they realized, they also found out through the PET scan, which is, oh, where did I write it down? The positron emission tomography scan, that they could also reduce the amount of pain by stimulating an area just to tell your brain that it's not in pain. Because technically, pain is all in your head whatever. It's, so it kind of tells the brain to not send that message all the way. And were you going to say something? You made a hand motion like you were going
No, no. Okay. Sorry. Fidgety.
Fidget. No, that doesn't work.
No, either. That doesn't work. Mineral.
A mineral. and so there are those measurable things. There are, and it is different that when we talked about that lady who was instantly healed her vapors or whatever it was, it is more than just the placebo effect, because numerous studies have shown that slightly more than 30% of those receiving a placebic effect. So 30% of them receiving a placebo show improvement.
Okay.
So that makes sense, right?
Yep.
Okay. And so in order for a drug to be approved, it must show that it's fixing more than just the 30% that could be placebo. Now I think I've erased the fantastic reveal of
and that is all.
And that is all at the end. It is different. I erased the actual thing, but it is significantly different than just if it were a placebo effect.
So the placebo effect would be the conscious mind kind of triggering the subconscious, if you will.
Right. And you're trying to convince yourself and under hypnosis, you're taking away that
conscious mind altogether.
Right. And just being inputted. So basically what hypnotism does is it just opens the control panel of your head. So you're able to not hardwire, but you're able to access the things that are hidden behind our consciousness directly. But again, you can't do anything that you wouldn't normally do beforehand. The other thing I found interesting about this is that there doesn't seem to be there a lot of medical applications of this. I mean, there are people that do go to quit smoking or dieting, which can work. The things that can't, but I was pausing there because there's lots of times they'll sell self-help tapes or you'll go to a group thing. Those things don't work because for it to be effective, it has to be a one-on-one. It has to be a personalized experience for you, which makes it sound more like mumbo jumbo, but it's not, like I said, it's not that mass hysteria. Right. It's a different category than the hysteria, even though it's kind of using some of the same parts of the brain. So it was interesting to me that there is a real thing, it kind of feels like it's still, I think probably because we don't know how the brain works, we're just sort of setting it aside for later because I don't know if it's ethically because like you shouldn't be poking around in other people's brains or if that there's not a real application other than, or, you know, behavior modification.
Or you can't truly, our capabilities right now of measuring like what is your brain experiencing right now.
Right.
We don't have a little screen that we can hook up and say, what's Todd thinking?
Right.
And so it's all based on.
Nobody needs that channel.
And so there's not anything other than my personal take on hypnosis that we have.
Right.
We don't have empirical evidence of. Here is, you know, you got some PET scans and some EEGs, but that's not giving the experience.
And that's not zeroing the scale in any way.
Exactly. So when I was in 10th grade, so I was 15 years old, in the back of one of my magazines was a ad for Send Away to learn how to hypnotize. And I absolutely did that. It was like Boys Life or something. It was actually probably a Popular Mechanics.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And I loved that. And so it was probably that, or, you know, it was before Wired. And so,
Ranger Rick.
Ranger Rick. And so I sent away for it. And it was probably, it was more than a pamphlet, but it was, you know, a mini book of probably 60 pages and double spaced, you know, just so they could sell something for $7.50 to some, you know, jack-off kid. And so I did this very specifically because in 10th grade, as a sophomore in high school, there was a hypnotist show in the gym one day. And it was like a school-sanctioned event. Like, wow. it was like, let's all go to the gym and watch The Amazing Randy. Just
who is also the janitor.
Right. And so like a dozen kids got brought up in from the audience onto the stage, and he talked to each of them initially, and then he did this, all right, dim the lights, and you're gonna count to 10, way down, and down, and down, way down,
and you're concentrating on my voice,
way down, and like he had this very
theatrical,
very theatrical, very you know, theatrical, and what's interesting about hypnosis is you have to do these tricks to trick the conscious mind into believing that this is an important thing enough to kind of believe in, so that it does believe in it and then lets go.
Right.
And then once you're past that conscious gate,
right, then it's the big open field.
It's the big open field. And so the swinging, you know, watch, you know, the swinging timepiece, if the person that you are hypnotizing, if that's what they believe needs to happen in order to be hypnotized, then get the friggin' watch out.
Yeah.
Because that's the only thing that's
in Franz Mesmer's case.
Right. It's going to be the one thing that,
because he noted that was the key. He's like, well, I need the magnet, or I need these, I think he said hand movements,
right,
for her to believe that thing is happening,
that it's special,
right?
And I remember that in the book of like that you needed something that was that convinced them that it was more than just your
mind,
the talking you through it, and you're never going to hypnotize somebody that's your buddy. You need to have positional authority in some capacity over them, of like, this special person came in from out of town and he has this skill of you know, and he's a master.
Or if you were doing behavior modification, you would go to the
doctor.
Which actually the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association have, like, you can be registered. I don't know if registered isn't the right word, but you know what I mean? As a hypnotist. Like, it is part of... I mean, it is part of their... Although there is no one organization that does so, anyone who takes anything from, you know, a 2-day class can actually be registered as a hypnotist.
So this is Barbara Reynolds, and she was...
How is she?
She went to high school with me, and she remembers
I thought you were reading a professional hypnotist name off me.
Dr. Dean, that was his name. And so
so she went to the assembly with you.
She was at the assembly with me.
Is insane.
So Barbara, you just missed the part where we were talking about Dr. Dean. Oh my God. And so it was the assembly. Like, we went to an assembly at Vista High.
Crazy.
And
our school never would allow us, because that's allowing control over one's mind.
Right. So I watched that whole event, and I remember like Melanie Ellen was on stage, and she was the only one I knew, but whatever. And then all of that happened. I got the book because I was fascinated.
Yeah.
Now that I'd seen it happen. And so now I was fascinated. So I got the book, and I just there's a whole process of self-hypnosis
okay.
that is really kind of in the spirit of meditation just like letting go of your conscious mind to free up suggestibility about anything else. And but you're right on all the accounts of you're not going to make somebody stab somebody else or make anything happen that isn't possible for them to do normally. You can learn traits of I feel full and trick your brain into mm-hmm. thinking that you're full more often than you're not, and you can lose weight that way
mm-hmm.
or better habits or not smoking or
right.
like this cigarette tastes super bad.
It's an association usually.
Yeah. And
I believe that weakens over time too, because I would imagine your conscious brain wants to fill in that gap of like, wait, I'm being told this thing that isn't. So I'd imagine it kind of takes upkeep or something like that. Like you can't do a one-off now. It doesn't seem like that would work that way.
Yeah. So I'm going to look up Dr. Dean and see.
That's crazy.
He can't still
be
alive.
Still out there.
He can't still be alive.
I want to do a whole show on dancing mania.
But yeah. Isn't that really just the second chapter of Acts? Like this? maybe there's a correlation. I don't know. Might be.
That wouldn't surprise me, because I mean, it's not a possession. It's not it's just a communal, a communal.
Barbara Reynolds
trance-like
says
state.
That he died a few years ago.
Oh,
oh, Dr. Dean.
We're sorry. I don't.
Yeah. Sorry,
I don't
Dr.
have
Dean.
Any kind of a. No, shoot. That's not right. Anyway, so it was an interesting thing to look up that there is reality and there is a medical and measurable basis to how your brain checks out on itself during a situation like hypnosis and that. But you can't, I mean, obviously can't be hypnotized against your will, and you can't, so it's not quite the scare that I think used. Well, that was coming in the 80s too. I think it had a resurgence because then that's when the rock music is the devil movement kind of, they all coalesced into right. one great Geraldo Rivera special on Satanism. But anyway,
awesome.
So that's all I had.
Yay.
For Franz Mesmer. And now you can all have that little fact of mesmerized. All right. Well, that does another. Oh, we forgot to intro the show again. Well, this is the Mark and Toddcast. I'm one of your hosts, Todd Workoven. With me, as always, is Mark Middleton.
Hi.
How are you anyway?
I'm good.
We never talk.
I know.
You can listen to more of our shows. Actually, my mom was mentioning that she listened to the Fred Rogers episode that we did, the Mr. Rogers episode. And I was thinking about that on the way up here too, that it's an ever increasing stressful time, and if you want to be happy, you can go back and listen to that episode, or just look up some Mr. Rogers clips again. But you can also hear Mark and myself and the Unipiper on our other podcast, Portland at the Movies. You can see that at portlandatthemovies.com, and on Facebook, you can find all of our old episodes at markandtoddcast.com, and you can drop us a line on Facebook or by email if you have questions or suggestions for a topic or other things that you want to hear. Speaking of things that I don't want to hear, but I'm going to play anyway, I will play us out with David Duchovny.
Chad Graham just joined. It's like, what? The end? I just got here.
Sorry,
just joining.
Hopefully
I
already
feel hypnotized.
You love
Hi,
the
Chad.
Mark and Todd cast.
So you
the
love
Mark and Todd cast
the Mark
is your
and
favorite
Todd cast
podcast.
Way down.
Oh, that's another one I want to do. The Not Nerd Podcast was talking about the ASMR videos, the
3D
sound or whatever, and David wasn't quite sure. Dave wasn't sure when, so that reminded me of when you get real close.
Yeah.
But it's different than that. You can do that. You can do the scissors, the hair cutting ones. And so we'll have to talk about that sometime.
Yeah.
We should
make one of those.
I wanted to do that before, but didn't you say we needed five microphones or something ridiculous?
No, we need microphones, but we need to embed them in a basically a silicon head. We need to make it. It'll be complicated.
I know, but that's the part that I didn't understand, is like, not only do you need the microphones, you need to like put them in a silicone head.
Right. Because what you're trying to do is...
But why not just position the microphones on the table? Like, why do you need...
No, you need the resonant cavity, like this...
You need a you need a cranium to bounce sound off. Okay, well, whatever. And I won't play the whole David Duchovny song, else we'll get in trouble. Like, we got in trouble for playing.
Yeah, so last week our video got taken off.
It's still on my feed. I'm still able to watch it, and I downloaded it, so I'll put it up on YouTube and I'll cut that part off.
So they blocked it from everybody else.
The copyright hammer down because we played too much Information Society. Information Society was able to tell that because we were the only people playing Information Society that entire day.
So. Also, literally the next day, I was watching an episode of Star Trek, and Spock goes, "Pure energy."
No,
and
way!
I'm like, I just saw that. I just saw that. But yeah,
that's hilarious. So yeah, so we will see you next time. Here's David Duchovny. It's like a Tom Petty that can sing.
Yeah.
Man of words to say, man of lies, but see, that's Tom Petty. Man of lies, that would be the. Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
So we will see you guys next time.
Okay.